You're listening to Lawyers Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
Welcome to Community Connections, and I'm Alan Collier, and it's my pleasure to be with you for the actually next 3 hours. We've got our legal hour coming up right now, then between 1 and 2 we've got Woree Community House, Sonia coming up to tell us what's going on there, and then between 2 and 3 we've got Choice Tunes. As I've said before, a lot of you will know the person's coming in, but it'll be interesting. Or you might not know the person, actually. You'll know the organisation they're from. So anyway, let's get started. We've got Con and Philip from Hutchison Legal. Welcome, gentlemen.
Good morning, Alan. Great to be here.
Now, something's gone wrong. No, sorry. Go again.
Oh, good morning, Alan. Great to be here.
It's thanks great for to having have us. You too. And also you, Philip.
Thank you.
It's we sent you away with a question. As we've got some more, or one or two, to send you away with this afternoon. So who's going to tell us the answer to our question, or tell us what the question was first,
please? I'll take this one. So the question was surrounding contempt of court.
Yep.
And there were three specific questions. What's the law around this? What is the range of circumstances in which it can occur? And what are the ramifications or consequences of being in contempt of court?
Yep.
Starting generally, the law is around contempt. It is a criminal offence, just in the same way that any other crimes are. It's a crime to commit contempt of court.
Yep. And let's just ask one quick question.
Sure.
What is contempt of court?
Well, that sort of brings us to the range of circumstances.
Go for it.
It's
yep.
a very broad. It's a very broad offence. A lot of different conduct can be considered contempt of court. For example, refusing to comply with court orders. So if the court tells you to do something and you as a party or a legal practitioner in a case refuse to do that or fail to do that, you could be held in contempt.
Yep.
And that might be something as simple as you must provide this document by this date.
Yep.
And if you don't do that, it's possible. It's not likely that, you know, missing a deadline by one day is going to get you in contempt, but those sort of things can be considered contempt of court in a more minor sense. In a broader sense, witness misconduct can be contempt of court.
When you say witness misconduct, what, swearing at the judge or something, or what?
Absolutely. That also falls under interfering with court proceedings. So if you stand up, even if you're not a party to a case, if you stand up in court, you're just viewing in the public gallery and you run up and punch the judge in the face, you could be held in contempt. Well, you'd be charged with assault as well.
Yeah.
There's a real life case, a guy jumped and grabbed the wig off the judge.
There you go, yeah.
Contempt of court.
So obviously you'd be charged with assault, but contempt as well, because you're interfering in the process of court. And a big one can be in releasing information that is not supposed to be released to the public. That can be a really, really serious example of contempt. A commonly known real-life example of that is Darren Hinch, who was back in 1986,
was
it?
Yeah, in the 80s, that's right. He said some things on his show. He disclosed the identity, I think, of some... Was it the victims?
I think it was the perpetrators.
No, because
people were generally pretty supportive of him.
Yep. Yes.
Because he had given out information about people who had done some horrible things, but under the law, he was interfering with the proceedings. So,
yes.
And I think he went to prison for that, didn't he?
He did.
Yeah. So that's a pretty serious example. Mm-hmm. That's one of the ramifications. As I said, it's a criminal offence. So,
what sort of penalties, apart from jail, what sort of penalties are available?
You could be given a fine. That's much more likely in a minor case of contempt. Contempt is what's called a summary offence, which is one of the two categories of criminal offences, the other being indictable offences, or you can just refer to those as serious offences. Summary offences generally have lower penalties. So off the top of my head, I believe the maximum penalty for contempt is 2 years imprisonment. Maximum penalties are reserved for the absolute worst examples of offending. So you're much more likely not to go to prison for contempt, but in Darren Hinch's case, I think it was a pretty serious interference in the court process. So,
yep.
yeah. But yeah, a fine would be available, or even just what's called an undertaking, a good behaviour bond, undertaking of good behaviour, is more likely in very minor circumstances, which is where you basically just have to tell the court you'll be good for a certain amount of time. And if you are, then you don't have any other ramifications.
So contempt of court can either be from somebody that doesn't comply with what the court tells them to do, or it could also be in the actual court itself by misbehaving or but lying as a witness or something, that's not going to come as contempt of court, is it? That'd come as its own...
That's perjury.
Perjury, yeah.
So, yeah, contempt is... The purpose of contempt is... The wording in a case from the 1980s is to vindicate the authority of the court. So it's basically what that means is to put weight behind what the court tells people to do and what the court directs in legal cases. So
I think the fear of contempt is also what keeps the politicians in line when the judges give a decision that the politicians don't like, which is politically unpopular or, you know, not the way the government wanted things to go.
Yep.
The politicians have to be very careful. They can't sort of say that judge is an idiot or, you know, that judge has no clue, right? They have to tippy-toe around because if they're bringing the authority of the court into question, that could be a contempt of court. And an example from recent years is where various media outlets, and I think the Herald Sun in particular, had a full front page, which was all black, saying, "This is the story we're not allowed to tell you."
Oh, yep.
And it was about the George Pell's trial.
Yep.
And they're saying, "We know this stuff, but we're not allowed to tell you because the court has, you know, issued suppression orders." Those media outlets that were trying to, even that reporting of a non-story, they were put up for the consideration of, is that contempt? Because they're bringing the whole process into disrepute. The media, radio personalities, everyone need to be careful, yep. Politicians, that they don't undermine the court's processes.
All right, look, we'll take a quick break and we'll be back with more.
You're listening to Lawyers, Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
And hello to Grant if you happen to be listening. We're back on, Con, you've got a story to tell us about.
Yeah, just one finishing, final story on this issue of contempt of court. There was an infamous case in the not too distant past, in the last 5 years, where a man was ordered in a family court matter to produce documents, financial disclosure documents, and he was struggling to comply with this court order. And the judge got so frustrated with him that he said that his breaches of those orders was a contempt of court and sentenced him to 12 months jail.
Jesus
now,
Christ.
That seems a bit harsh, right? So, yes, the man thought so too, and he successfully appealed that. So he did not go to jail for 12 months because that was considered far too harsh a punishment for what was technically could be a contempt of court. You know, didn't justify that kind of punishment. So there we go. That's real life. That actually
happened
in Australia.
Now, we've had a couple of questions, and I'm a bit. I just don't know how to phrase them because I don't want to get into trouble. But I believe the Jason Roberts case is now finished, isn't it? Like he's now been acquitted.
Yes.
So we can talk about it.
That's just from the news. Yes.
Yeah. Well, let's put it into another context. You've got a guy, whoever it might be, or a woman, who's been committed to trial for, committed to jail for 20 years. He got longer than that, so we're going somewhere else. He then was able to appeal and then get a second trial, and that trial has now found him innocent.
Well, no, it's never innocent. It's not guilty.
Right, not guilty. Right.
So you have to prove a crime beyond a reasonable doubt.
Right.
All right.
So he's been found not guilty. Where can that... is that the end of that case? I mean, could the Crown appeal against... because when that person was sentenced the first time, we know there's appeals and all that. When it goes back like that to a second trial, is there any appeal rights by the prosecutor if the prosecutor doesn't agree with it? Well, he's not going to appeal against it because he's now been found not guilty. So is there anywhere or is that the end of that case? Let's not talk about Jason Roberts because now I think about it, I think the police
are
doing...
other trials. He's got to face other charges.
Well, yeah, and apart from that, I think the police are investigating their own... what happened in that, if I read in today's paper. Yeah. So let's take Jason case.
There was problems, I think, in the statements that were taken at the time or the non-taking of a statement from somebody.
So let's push that case right out of the way. Mm. In the same sort of instance where a person's been found guilty... years later, they've been able to get a fresh trial and where it is now. Could the prosecutor appeal against that or is that now finished?
So we do have a rule against double jeopardy, which is in general terms that you can't be tried for the same crime twice.
Yep.
However, that appeal rights are a different beast. So For another famous example, in George Pell's trial, he appealed twice. So he went to the Supreme Court and he was found guilty. He appealed the conviction, right? That is the guilty verdict. You can appeal in criminal matters. You can appeal either the conviction or the sentence. So if you're appealing the sentence, you'd be saying that it's either too light or too harsh.
Yep.
Obviously, only one party's going to say it's too light. Only one party's... if you're a defendant, you're not going to say that your sentence was too light. And then the conviction is to say that the evidence is presented does not actually, on an objective basis, go to proving a verdict of guilty or not guilty.
Yep.
It's a very high standard. So you have to show that... let's say you were a defendant and you were found guilty and you're appealing that decision, you have to show that there's absolutely no way any reasonable jury should have found you guilty. You can't just say, I don't like this decision. I want to go again.
Yep.
You have to have some proof that there is actually a reason that something's been decided wrong.
And there has to be an error in law or an error in the procedure that's so prejudicial that the verdict shouldn't be allowed to stand. So oftentimes appeals will be launched on the basis that the judge's directions to a jury about the evidence they've heard or the evidence that they should disregard, those kind of things. Sometimes the appeal is purely based on the judge's directions to the jury
right.
were either prejudicial or just incorrect and led to a guilty verdict or a not guilty verdict. That shouldn't stand, and a different jury should go through it all again.
But
a different judge should give proper directions.
It still hasn't answered our question that our person gave.
Well, the prosecutor can appeal a decision.
Yeah, but even though it's a second trial,
if there's an error if the judge has made an error somewhere, then they will look at that and decide is it such a grave error that they would be successful to appeal it, because sometimes errors are not big enough to overturn that. It's like it wasn't a big enough error to change the decision,
right.
Put it that way. So the appeal won't be successful if it's a small error. If it's a large enough error, then you'd go and appeal it. So the prosecutors can appeal as well if there's this kind of error in the hearing.
And if it was appealed all the way to the High Court by the prosecution and the person was still found not guilty, then the issue of double jeopardy would come up of retrying them again for the same crime.
Right. So if a person's been found, if they've been tried, found guilty, then the second trial found not guilty, so the double jeopardy would come in because they've already been tried twice for the one... Haven't they? They've already been tried twice.
So with an appeal, as Con said, you're not retrying the same evidence.
I thought something like this one was retried right from start.
So his retrial was, but in terms of a prosecutor running it again, they would have to appeal it. As Con said, there had to be an error. So they're not just bringing the same evidence in and saying, look at it again.
Yep.
Because that's been done, basically. Yep. So there has to be some reason that the case needs to be appealed to a higher court.
All right. Yep. We'll take a quick break and we'll be back with more.
Aruba, Jamaica, ooh, I wanna take ya. Bermuda, Bahama, come on, pretty mama. Key Largo, Montego, baby, why don't we go? Jamaica, off the Florida Keys. There's a place called Kokomo. That's where you wanna go to get away from it all. Bodies in the sand, tropical drink melting in your hand. We'll be falling in love to the rhythm of a steel drum band. Down in Kokomo,
Aruba, Jamaica, ooh, I wanna take you to Bermuda, Bahama. Come on, pretty mama, Key Largo.
listening to Lawyers, Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
Welcome back to Community Connections, and of course, being the second Wednesday of the month between 12 and 1, we have the team in from Hutchinson Legal, and we've got Con and Philip. Philip, you want to tell us about, we were all sick to death of getting these scam texts, so there's something, a move there.
Absolutely. So in the past week, we've seen
new rules introduced by the ACMA, which is the Australian Communication and Media Authority. And those rules put the onus on the telco companies to put a stop to the scam text messages and to monitor them. We saw similar rules brought in last year, I believe.
A
few years ago with relation to telephone calls.
Yep. But we're still getting them.
I'm still getting them, believe you me. But the thing now is that with these new rules, the telco companies can face fines if they don't do their due diligence and do their part in stopping them. Right. Whereas in before these rules came in, they didn't have any obligations with respect to text messages.
Right.
Yeah.
So what are they going to do?
Well, hopefully they'll slow down the amount of scam text messages that we're seeing. I think a lot of the scammers sort of moved from telephone to text after those original rules were brought in. And it's different now because it's you can put things like links in text messages. So they might tell you that they're texting you from your bank and you need to press this link or we're going to freeze your funds or something or we're going to send you some money if you press this link. So it opens up a whole new variety of scams, and they certainly get more and more creative as time goes on, the scammers. So hopefully with these new rules, the text messages will slow down.
Well, are those scam texts, though, can they only get the? Are they only going to pick up the ones that are supposed to be from your bank and all this? What about these, particularly women that get caught with these overseas guys send me some money, I'm going to come and see you, oh, I'm stuck in Hawaii, how do I get some money, I need some money to get to Australia, and then you find out they were never going to come anywhere. Is that going to be able to be picked up as well, or is that...
That's something that not specifically on text messaging, but that can be part of it. There's different applications. Those romance scams.
Yep.
They try and sort of profile you. They look up what if you've got a Facebook profile, on Instagram, these kind of places where you let out some personal information or your interests and hobbies.
Yep.
And they sort of build up this profile, and then they try and communicate with you and try and be the perfect romance partner, online romance partner.
Is these texts going to be picked up on those, or is that too personal about it?
Yeah, and I think the texts are more about trying to get you to press a link that goes to a website that looks legitimate and where you put your login details. So you get this text message that says, oh, it's your bank, and you press on the link on the text message, you immediately go to your web page. The web page looks legitimate. It looks like it is that bank. Yep. You type in your ID code or your username password, and they've then got that. You've put it into an illegitimate website. So that's why it's really important as well to use what they call multi-factor authentication. It's coming in more and more now where you can't just use an email address and a password to get into a lot of websites now.
Yep.
They will say, we'll send you a code to your mobile phone.
Yep.
And you get a code. But what they're trying to do is get this information from you so that they can then access those websites and pretending to be you. So that's why it's important not to just press any link you see in a text message. Sometimes it's a phone number as well. It's so easy now to just press a phone number in a text message.
Yes.
And then they pretend to be from a legitimate entity, business that you deal with. And again, they suck the information out of you. They've profiled you, and then they sound like they know who you are.
Yep.
And then they get information from you. So you just need to be real careful.
And the problem with that is that when you do get a legitimate text from the bank or someone, well, then you don't know whether to answer it or not either.
Well, that's right. You know, if somebody says they're calling you from the tax office, it's like, okay, so why are you asking me my date of birth?
Yeah, that's true.
You already know my date of birth.
No, I was thinking more I've had one only a couple of weeks ago from the bank, and luckily, well, not luckily, I wouldn't have fallen for it, but it wasn't even a bank I dealt with. So
yeah,
I mean, you just, but if it had been from my own bank and it sounded legit, how does a person know that if you are expecting something from the bank, whether access or not, you really need to check the bank all the time, don't you, before you give any information?
Yes, it's important to check phone numbers and you should ring the legitimate phone numbers. So you've got to make sure you go to the correct website, get the actual phone number and ring that number rather than just the number that's been sent to you on a text message.
Yeah, because I think it might have been Grant was telling us about someone who posed as a legitimate they were doing, this person sold a house and the solicitor was doing all the work for them and then they got a text to say, well, you need to transfer $550,000 now to settle and that wasn't the legit. But up until then, everything going through the solicitor was legit.
Yes,
And they blew their money.
Well, yeah, look, sometimes the access, the text is the beginning of a process. So if they can get your access to your, online email account, they can then monitor your emails without you even realising it. They're watching. And as soon as they see a legitimate email go to you saying, send money to this account for your conveyancing transaction, they then create a fake email, make it look like it's coming from the people you're dealing with, and they change the bank account detail. They say, oh, that other email was incorrect. Here's the correct details.
Bang,
it's gone. And now, we had a client who rang us up one day and said, you've asked me to put $50,000 into your trust account. Did that come from you? And we said, no, it definitely did not come from us. Our emails all say at the bottom, ring us first.
Yeah, good idea.
And because of this problem, we always ask, and we often ring clients as well and say, verify your bank account details for us. So it's very important because it's not our system that was hacked. It was the client's emails that were hacked.
Yep.
And then they created this fake email to make it look like it had come from us. So it's very important to be vigilant.
Double check and triple check.
Double check and try and talk to real people. Yeah. We definitely encourage that. So.
All right. We'll take another quick break and we'll be back with more.
Yarra Valley FM acknowledges the traditional owners, the Wurundjeri people, as the custodians of this land we broadcast from. We pay respects to elders past, present, and emerging.
We've broken down.
Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
And welcome back to the Legal Hour with Hutchison Legal with both Con and Phil. Phil, you want to give the listeners a bit of an idea and some tips how to beat these scams?
Absolutely. Or so, yeah, just following on what we were talking about before, a few things to look out for. Number one, it's usually going to be something you're not expecting. So I can't speak to everyone else, but my bank only really emails me pretty standard stuff, statements and ads, a lot of ads. But if something comes out of the blue asking you to put your account details in, asking you to click a link, or especially asking you to send some money somewhere, that's a big red flag and you should definitely at least investigate that. You know, do your due diligence before following that. Anybody who's asking you out of the blue to send money is probably scamming you if you're not expecting it to happen.
I must say I had a live phone call from a guy and he said to me, oh, you know, you've got outstanding debts and we've got the FBI chasing you. I said, you bloody idiot, that's not Australia.
Exactly. I've had calls from the IRS, so, you know, not the ATO. So absolutely. They put out the feelers to every phone number they can get.
I think they sometimes say that there's already a warrant out for your arrest.
Yeah.
I can tell you the ATO will not have a warrant out for your arrest without you pretty much well knowing about it. Because
you'd have plenty of warnings, wouldn't you?
Yes, exactly right. So yeah. You shouldn't be expecting that to be true because it'd be by complete surprise.
And the police wouldn't bring you to tell you they had a warrant for your arrest, would they? Oh, they'd come and get you, wouldn't they?
Yes, correct.
Depends on the seriousness. They might give you a call and say, we want you to come down for minor crimes. But if there's a serious offence and you're a flight risk, I don't think they'd be warning you. Yeah. So, yeah, just look out. The other thing to be careful of is we were talking about some really obvious scams. You can't let those ones sort of lull you into a false sense of security because some of them are a lot more advanced. Some people will actually pick a target and learn information about them and then come at you with something a lot more convincing. So, yes, there are a lot out there that are really obviously fake, like when you've got the FBI onto you or something like that.
Yeah.
But nobody should think that they know absolutely when a scam's coming and they can identify it straight away because you never know what creative ideas people are going to put into one of those scams.
I guess they're all the time coming up with more and more ideas too.
Exactly, yeah.
And the facts are that they are so convincing, literally millions and millions of dollars are being lost every year.
Well, it's billions, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's an industry almost.
Guys, we need to move on because I know you want to talk about road safety and we will. But I'd like to, if you've got a pen and pencil, we've had some inquiries from a couple of people. Now, I'm not sure whether they're involved in these cases or not. But they want to know, first of all, what you can tell your solicitor. Can they say anything to a solicitor? And is that solicitor then have to pass it on in a case? Or are they able to claim, well, no, it's confidential that the client told me. So can a person walk into a solicitor and say, yeah, I did this gig and rah, 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 and they're confident that stays with it, or can under pressure of a court the solicitor be made to say what they were told? Secondly, what information does a solicitor or barrister get from the courts? Like, the prosecutor has built his case and he's all ready to go. Does he part any of that onto the defence, or is it up to the defence to build their own case and the prosecutor builds his own, and then on the day the defence person has to try and knock the prosecutor's case down? So do you get prior knowledge? And I guess, well, look, pardon me, I guess it all comes back to the same thing: how much information a client can give to a solicitor, and whether that can be either subpoenaed or whatever, and whether it be verbal or written. So it's quite a complex little issue, these couple of people. I've been asked bits and pieces from a couple of people, so I've put it all together. So the information you give to your defence lawyer, whether it can be challenged, whether it can be subpoenaed, particularly if it was written, then once how you build the case. I mean, obviously the prosecutor believes he's got the information to send you to court.
So this is for criminal matters.
Yeah,
we're talking criminal matters.
Yeah, yeah. And then what does the prosecutor share any of that with the defence, or does the defence guy just find out that on the day, and therefore he's got to keep thinking on his feet? So if you could do that, and someone will come back next month.
Yeah, we'll pass that on to our colleagues for next time.
Guys, we've still got a couple of minutes up our sleeve. I'll just take one quick... No, we won't. We won't take that song. We'll keep talking. Con, you want to talk about... You're saying that at the moment there's quite a lot of traffic offences coming up.
Oh, we've got a few inquiries recently about road traffic offences and speeding Just be wary that the police are on the lookout. It seems that they've increased their activities, and people are losing demerit points. I think people are driving in traffic now has made people impatient and doing some things that they wouldn't normally do. So you just keep in mind that it has consequences with suspended licences and things. If you lose too many points, you'll be, riding your bike to work instead, or getting others to drive you around for 6 months.
Which would be pretty convenient.
Yeah, and that's quite a disruptive way to be living. So just keep an eye out and watch your speed and look after everyone else.
Con, you've just hit a bit of a point there. You're saying that, you know, people are getting a bit more impatient now, they're back in traffic and all that. Is there any statistics that you could chuck at us next month on road rage, whether there has been any increase in road rage after the last in the last 2 years, or last particularly 6 months since 7 months since people got out of lockdown?
Oh, we'll have to take that one on notice to get the stats.
But you would think there would be some stats.
Yeah, I think not having driven every day for a while during lockdowns for the last few years, people's attention levels, skill levels, or maybe just increased distraction levels. I think it's leading to less polite or less considerate road behaviour, which is potentially leading to this road rage.
Well, I think one of the things that's happened, and for anybody that was working, that was allowed to work during lockdown, that you hopped on the highway and the freeway, and you could basically travel at 80, 100 k's where you could, because there were so few working.
Mm.
But then as all of a sudden you start looking at it now, and, you know, you can still be doing, 50 minutes to get to the city and stuff like that, where you were doing 30. So I would have thought that maybe there was a bit of a lift in that. And the other thing too, I've got to be careful what we say here, but, I mean, we seem to be having a few shootings at the moment too.
Mm. Yeah, hopefully it's not random that we're all at risk. Hopefully it's usually the police will let people around that incident know whether it's seen as targeted or random.
Well, you think most of them are fairly targeted,
yes,
aren't they?
That's right.
They always seem to say, I won't talk those.
Yeah.
But they generally come out and say, they're known to each other.
Yes, exactly. That's right.
Yeah. So they, and I think in each of them, the last few. They know who they're looking for. It's just they can't find them at the particular time, aren't they?
Yeah. So, that's right. We hopefully it's not a risk to the public generally, but there are specific people that should look out for themselves, and sometimes the police will actually contact them and warn them that they need to take care.
I read somewhere the other day where one of those people who got shot had been warned, and he more has said to the police, stick it, I don't care.
Yeah, well, you know, sometimes they think they're smarter than the police. So. Unfortunate, but true.
Or a lot of bravado too.
Mm.
All right, guys, look, it's terrific for you to have come in yet again. Thanks to for coming in. We always enjoy this segment on the second Wednesday of the month between 12 and 1. So it'd be great to have someone in next month, guys.
Thank you very much, Alan. Always a pleasure to be here.
And, Con, we're going to see you in about a month's time on Choice Tunes, aren't we?
Yes, looking forward to that too.
I hope you're getting all your songs together, you no doubt are. And we'll see what Con's life's been all about. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Alan.